special call meeting to order. City of Troy, City Council, Monday, July 13th at 7:01 p.m. First order of business, roll call.
Walter Plant, present.
Dana Woodruff, present. Kelly Aaron, present.
Richard Adams, present.
Jerry Washington, present. First order of business, public comments. Feel free to address council for up to 5 minutes. Just start with your name and address, please. Go ahead, Stan.
Stan Krause, 1130 Short and Gore. I'm just curious, what was the time frame to redo this room?
Well, about 2 months ago. I'll be covering that in my report tonight. You can hold for just a moment.
In the parking lot, too. You're going to talk about that, too, right? Good. Anita?
100947. I spent most of this morning on the phone with FEMA, with the buyout program. And I found out something very interesting. I thought I'd ask a lot of people. I sent in my paperwork about a week and a half ago, passed it over to them. And they're coming at 10 o'clock in Belmont tomorrow morning to do an inspection. That's FEMA. However, the contractor, which is the big contractor Hills, they're supposed to come to do an inspection tomorrow too, because they sent out their work to SRS, which is out of Texas City, and they have already inspected me. SRS inspected me like a week and a half ago. Hill's coming over sometime tomorrow, but absolutely they don't want to be there when FEMA is there to inspect. It's sort of like 10 o'clock, we're just not going to show up. So FEMA will be there tomorrow. They're coming from Beaumont. That's FEMA's record. This is the buyout program. So the big company that FEMA has contracted out, which is Hill's, and they contract out to SRS out of Texas City.
All doing the same thing?
Unbelievable. So this month, tomorrow will be, if both of them come tomorrow, that will be my fifth inspection in July. Nothing's changed. I mean, I'm not having a problem with my fire extinguisher still there when they check the smoke detectors. But what's coming to Belmont tomorrow is actually representative from the buyout program.
Now it gets clearer. So you've had 5 inspections on your FEMA housing. Are you
trying to say
no? No, you missed that. You missed that.
Sorry. on the
FEMA trailer. Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
You've had 5 FEMA inspections this month, and how many last month?
3. So you have inspectors that come out from Texas City, which is SRS. Then you have inspectors that come out and inspect those inspectors, and they're from Hill. And then you have a FEMA inspector that comes out and inspects to make sure that Hill and SRS are doing the right job. And y'all need to know we'll be another day with a lot of inspectors out here. And literally nothing ever changes. So, I mean, I've always scheduled, you know, the inspections, so I'm sure I'm here. And what Phil told me today was definitely they do not want to be there tomorrow when Tina is there for the buyout program. And I said, well, he's going to do the same inspection. Why don't you just meet at 10 o'clock, get to know each other? That way he knows that you're doing your job. And he said, no. So I don't know if this is
Kellogg, Bradford,
Albert,
Albert.
I don't know what's going on.
Is the buyout, are you talking about buying out of homes, or are you talking about
buying out of the trailers?
Okay. And there's not buying, they're selling, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They're offering only the occupants, the occupants
see
the trailer,
yeah,
to buy out.
Okay.
You know about that?
Yes. No, we have seen that. But realize that the city ordinance states that those FEMA trailers got to be removed by March, like the 15th or something like that.
And so the construction on a new home is still going on, didn't want
to happen. We have to address that. But, I mean, we put in place when we decided, when we talked about allowing the FEMA trailers to come into the city to have an ending date so that we can be sure that we don't have permanent residents in a FEMA trailer.
Right.
That, you know,
right.
That's not, we don't have any temporary housing allowed in the city. So, I mean, if you decide to buy that trailer,
it's gotta go.
It's gotta go.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, absolutely clear. Everybody's clear on that.
Yeah. The notice that FEMA sends out to the occupants, and I'm one of them, was if you buy it, you gotta remove this temporary housing. You have to remove it within 30 days. So if anybody buys, gotta haul up.
Your letter doesn't say that.
Well, the letter I got here. The initial letter.
I've got one right here.
It's
for the buyout.
Right. I'm talking about the FEMA trailer itself.
Oh, yeah.
If you're interested in buying the FEMA trailer, if you're selected, so forth, there's a wording there that indicates you will remove it within 30 days of the purchase.
I think they just give you, let me look at the letter.
It's not the letter, there's a statement attached to the letter. It's one page, they call it a statement. It lists different criteria. That I think it, you know.
That was my concern. If people might buy it, they may not be aware of the ordinance limitations. I don't know if there's a way we can get the information out fast enough if they are.
I'll probably do something on that.
Informed.
I would do that for you.
Oh, yeah, we've got something in place. We're going to take care of that.
No, we're going to do it directly to those people, traders.
We have that list. We know where they are.
Okay, it says right here, and I see what you're talking about under special notice. I agree that it says accept all responsibility, liability for the housing unit, including all utilities and moving the unit to a permanent location within 30 days of the completion of sale if necessary.
We as staff have interpreted that you can leave it there until the March 2010 deadline, and that is the or necessary. That's when you hit it.
Okay. Then they have a list of I don't know if you've seen like the six items down here at the bottom that they require.
Yes. One of which is approval of the city.
I would think that if necessary, it really applies to making arrangements to get it out of there in 30 days. That's what, now, you can interpret it any way you want, but if you may need more than 2 weeks, you may need the full 30 days.
Right.
So FEMA doesn't know what the city ordinance is, so that way it's a catch-all. They don't give a specific date because they don't know, you know, Seabrook's date might be different than ours, but it's okay, within 30 days, if necessary. City doesn't make you get rid of it,
you know,
it's not necessary.
When I talked to FEMA advisors about a week and a half ago, they came to my trailer, FEMA trailer, and said they want to try to remove or establish a deadline on all the leases by the end of this year. Because I asked them for an additional 2 months because my construction is obviously it's about 2 or 3 months late. And they said, we'll look at it later, but right now they expect me out at least to terminate at the end of this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. There are going to be a lot of people that are finished.
Hey, that's what they told me. Now, whether they change it, they weren't receptive to changing my date, and they'll move them into housing, I guess, or move the trailers. I don't know.
I talked to Martha Lewis today at my Jackson's office, and what she told me was Texas is used to moving forward on where it's taking so long to go through the whole FEMA program, in other words. Texas is the state that wants to get on with their business.
Yeah.
And so they're encouraging FEMA to get moving on this buyout program, basically, is what she told me. Because his office also knows about it.
That
Texas
isn't motivated to get
grants
that
like that. Yeah, and that was going to be my third item, is that how come Galveston's got this grant money to take down all the districts and the senior parks in our Broadway, and how do we do that? We can't we can't get grant money?
It's different pools. We have our FEMA, we have our FEMA Category A money, and we can apply for the tree money as well. But that's a different set of money than the development block grant money.
Okay. Gotcha.
Public comments.
Oh, Doug Wilson, 227 Seagrove. The lot between myself and Keith has still not been touched since the storm. We don't know the physical address because mine's 227, he's 315, he's right next door, so I have no idea what. They did actually, he came in, he brought a brush hog and set it down, and that's been, a couple of weeks since he did that. But he has not been over there to do anything to that lot since the storm. And it's an eyesore. We have both been out there busting our tails, cleaning up our lots. I think they need to do the same thing.
When you say lot,
it's a vacant lot. Disgusting vacant lot.
Just did OT? Or did you want something else?
Yeah, he got 315 Seagrove. Sorry, I'm late. Didn't know if anyone asked about it. Have we heard anything on the grant money for the ditches and stuff?
No, it hasn't come up yet, but I'm sure it's going to come up in David's report.
Okay.
On the agenda.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Sidwell, 3342, Harold Marvin, shared the house with our daughter Charlotte Wells. We have a second home in North Texas. We were in 3 days after I here cleaned up and here looked at the time in and out. My only comment is I'm grateful for the communication that you all did. The community email that allows me, I'm not active on it, but monitor and keep up with it for Charlotte. But I'm just here tonight to kind of catch up with what's really going on. I appreciate all your effort. It's great to we're gone for a while and we come back and we see things moving and happening, and that's really good. I'm a little distressed about what little is happening on your farm, and I'm sure the name of Jerry and Diane are moving ahead with theirs. Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
Actually, good question. I have a friend who likes to move to Shore Acres, but one of these very ultra green people. And how would I find out what the regulations would be towards putting up a residential room generator? Like it had been mentioned that might not be possible because we're a bird sanctuary, but the whole city can't be a bird sanctuary. I guess, what do we know about wind generators?
Yeah, they could contact Latney. It falls under all of the other building regulations. The maximum height is being probably the biggest impediment to having a wind generator from a structural perspective, but it's no different.
Building it, the height problem.
Well, you would have to comply with the height regulation, the other zoning regulations. And so it is considered an accessory auxiliary building structure.
Is it
But is it okay? But if somebody needed it to be 33, they could ask for a variance of EMV.
I am very interested to know where all these staff come from, all of these wind generators killing all these birds. I mean, how many do they really kill?
California is a big issue.
Okay.
Is it safe to say that the house or the lot between W and Q have got citations perhaps?
The vacant lot there? It would be a fairly safe assumption, but I can't categorically say that it has. And that may be why it got a brush off dropped out there. So
that's what we were saying, that they probably brought it out there and set it there, and that way they said, well, we're starting on it.
The timing,
they didn't start on it.
I mean, if it's only been there a week, the timing is too coincidental. If you haven't done anything since September, then all of a sudden, a week ago, when we start sending out all the letters, you know, when we start getting people in court on the lots.
Probably brush off out there, it's not starting on it.
We'll look into it and see what's going on. While we're on public comments, I'd like to solicit from you, Keith. How were the results of the Peer Key Day?
The Peer Key Day, we had we charged everyone half because the beer was down half year and everybody's lost and everything else. So we cut the funds in half, the amount in half for this year. So if you look at how much we got compared to how much we got last year, we got about half. So it's really, we've gotten just about everyone that we got last year. So it's a little surprising to us too. We figured maybe 25% to 30-40% of the people. But if you look at the numbers, we got about half of what we got last year, which could have been half. And
could be 100% of the membership, yeah.
Right. So that actually real surprising.
There was quite a few people that came in and paid the full amount, even though they knew that we had to pay half. And there was quite a few donation visits. It was very overwhelming.
I received a call. Somebody said they missed the Peer Key Day. I'm assuming they can just contact you.
Yes. They have my number upstairs, and we'll get some more placards made to fill in the gates at Cap Washington. So we're going to have phone numbers on there again here in the next, probably in the next week.
Good.
Just a question, I know this is not going to happen, but money was obligated to extend the pier out, and
once the money was obligated, we were waiting on the Texas General Land Commission to okay us to put that back out there. And it took them a year after they had all the plans to finally okay it. So they okayed it, and we had a storm. Okay. So since it took a year, we went ahead and paid them the lease for that section, which was, I forgot how many hundreds of dollars for that part, and we continue to hang on to what we told them we were going to do. So if we don't have a storm this year, we're looking at going forward with it next year, but we've got the okay from them to do that.
Okay.
So hopefully we won't have a storm and we can get that back where it needs to be.
So what was the prior length and what was the new length be?
It was 600 feet to begin with, and now it's 300 feet. So it would double the size. Double the length of what it is right now. And before Leisha, it was 600 feet.
And that white marker out there, that was kind of
right. Yes.
All right, 4.1 council report.
I've been given a packet of the different building inspection firms. I got on the JM. I have nothing to report.
Y'all know the brick wall, that's the city line of Shore Acres or Shady River. City of Shore Acres sign is missing letters. Myself and former Mayor Nancy Edmondson. I ordered some letters to replace the one that's fallen off. We're trying to match them up, and so eventually we'll bring them by here and have them glued back on so
good.
It looks like City of Shore Acres again, so whatever it says. And then I worked with J.O. or had fun with J.O. Dana's July 4th parade. We got a truck out there. threw candy in my arm. I was sore the next day from throwing candy. So, had a big turnout. That's all.
Nothing to report.
And thank you, Richard, for organizing that dogwood parade. I think it's we need to be out there all the time as much as we can. I met with Barry Beasley, the new mayor of LaPorte. We had nice. I've known Barry for a number of years, so it was really more of a formality than just anything that actually happened. But brought him up to speed on a couple of things that jointly Shorters and LaPorte were doing, and of course missed a couple of really important ones, but that will come later. Attended the Economic Alliance Transportation Committee meeting. They had the new lady who's in charge of like community outreach for TxDOT, and specifically she talked about the overpasses, the contracts being let, and of course that's moving along. They're supposed to go out for bids this month. And also had a presentation on the Ike Dike. That was pretty interesting. It had a CD if anybody wants to borrow it. Also attended last weekend Pete Olson's town hall meeting. And, it was over at San Jacinto College. And so there was a lot of discussion about NASA and Johnson Space Center and stuff like that, the issues that they're facing. I told David I would share with council a couple anecdotes, and one of them was also Peter Representative Olson said that in the first 4 months that he was in office, Congress spent $4 trillion, $1 trillion a month. So lately the last six or seven votes he's voted for was to adjourn because he felt like he spent a lot less money when they're out of session than in session. But it didn't work. That's it for me.
Question.
Sure.
Where is this dike located, or what's supposed to be on that?
Oh, the Ike Dike. You haven't heard anything about it?
Well, is that one Galveston?
Yeah. They want to put a dike across the Bolivar Peninsula, across from the shore of Galveston Island to Bolivar, and then another dike on the San Luis Pass end. And so the idea is that when a big surge like Ike came at us, they can stop the surge. They can't, they can't stop the wind or anything like that. They can at least mitigate the surge.
This is the one that's movable.
Yeah,
like the swings and
desks. Yeah. That's up in Holland right now or something like that. Yeah. So there's two or three guys that are out pitching that on a, just trying to gather people that want to get involved, get endorsed.
I know I'll bring this up, but Atkinson Island, all that dredging that they're doing out there, how far is that island going to end up? Anybody have any idea? Is that going to continue going south, or they're expanding the island?
They're expanding the island to put dredge material on it. Of course, it's the work is stopped. But I actually had a couple of questions of Lavelle about that project. He hasn't completely got back to me on the Atkinson Island project, but he said that the work is stopped right now, pending they'll find out what's going on with that rash. And the latest result of all the tests is there's no biological or there's nothing on the land right now that is showing any signs of being a biological problem. They're trying to figure out what's caused all that brash on those workers.
So as far as anybody knows, the water is safe. I mean, the water in the area is safe. I wonder if they're running any tests of the water besides the land. I know they tested the land, and they tested the joining the water in it.
I don't know.
Well, rumors out that don't eat the fish out of Galveston.
Well, it's so. Not a rumor. They call them TMDLs. There's been a TMDL on eating fish out of Creek.
Yeah.
But there's been a TMDL about eating fish out of the St. Center River and the Houston Ship Channel. It just last year, in December of last year, got moved all the way past Red Bluff Point. So, a real scary picture you can find out like Gas Bay Estuary Program or something like that. There's always links to what they call TMDL. I can't remember what those letters stand for, but that's where they show you about all the warnings about crabs, speckled trout, and different species. But that one from Clear Creek just came out last, what, a week ago or 2 weeks ago.
I saw that one. I was wondering what's happening with the Atkinson Island thing.
When he gets back to me, I'll share some more with you.
Okay.
He just came back from vacation and he didn't have time for me to that. Sure. Yeah. We can see Atkinson Island. We can see all those trucks out there. I'm sure it's a lot of people have interest in knowing what's going on out there. David.
Good evening.
Staff report. David.
Linda is, will be out the rest of this week and we hope to have her back on Monday. And Annie and Rhonda stepped up to the plate and were here Thursday as well as I were, but they took care of municipal court Thursday evening for Brenda, and everything went smoothly. Interestingly enough, when it rains, it pours, and it pours even more. The prosecutor was unable to make it on Thursday night, and so we were short. Our prosecutor is also prosecutor in some other cities, but he's also the municipal court judge, the presiding judge in Missouri City. And he got detained on a case that was on the bench until about 7 o'clock. And so, but the driving time from Missouri City to here, with us having a court starting at 6 o'clock, that wasn't going to work. So, it was.
So, how did you do that?
Any cases that were going to be tried were reset. But the vast majority of folks that come to the municipal court come to plead their case with the judge on a guilty plea, extenuating circumstances. And so those cases all can proceed. The only ones that can't proceed are those that are going to plead not guilty. And of course, anyone who's pleading not guilty and asking for a jury trial wouldn't be heard on a Thursday night anyway. That would be scheduled for a jury trial day. So as it turns out, there was no harm, no foul, except for the prosecutor would have been able to help shepherd them through on some of those cases and speed the process up. So it was a good trial by fire learning experience. We continue to move forward with the work we're doing on revamping the accounting system and merging the various programs. We're about the halfway point on that, I believe. I'm getting the things merged. We're operating now on the new software and just about down to handling the anomalies that are in there. So that's good news. On the not good news, one of our police vehicles went down last night. It's in the shop. We're not quite sure what's wrong with it, but it won't start. It spins the engine pretty well, but yeah, one of the new Dodges. So that's in a shop, and hopefully tomorrow we'll hear what's going on with that. I believe that we have exceeded the mileage for the warranty. It's got about 41,000 miles on it. I think we have 36,000 covered on it. And it's one of the first Dodges that we got. So about at the end of that envelope. The city engineer has been moving ahead very slowly, but moving on the number of projects that we've tasked them with preparing for us for immediate execution. One of which is the parking lot of this building, which when the engineer was here, we previously discussed, we want to drop the parking lot a couple inches and change the flow out here so that we don't put water into the building. And we have that as a prerequisite to doing the interior repairs of the building because the type of construction we have here is in any heavy rain event, doesn't require flooding. We get water that comes through all these walls. Not as much the front wall since we lowered that out there and put in drainage, but we still get through the sidewalls on both sides and the back door. The parking lot took a beating with particularly the forklift traffic after we were doing work here and with supplies and operating the pod. So we're looking forward to getting that. Now that is a circumstance or a situation in both of these projects where we did get FEMA money. It's only 75% of that which FEMA deems to be eligible, so it's not certainly not going to make us whole. But like for the parking lot, we have about $14,000 that FEMA contributed to that. We have about $25,000 for the interior repairs of this building. Council about almost 3 months ago now, appropriated additional funds in the general fund for the rehabilitation of the interior of this building. We have some insurance proceeds we'll be using on this building to replace the roof, the roof damage. We've already replaced the plumbing stacks on top that were damaged when the tower came down. And the plan here as it is progressing, and we'll have plans for council to review and approve, is to turn this side over here into another meeting room so that we have two meeting rooms that will allow us to have a jury deliberation room when we have court in here instead of sending everybody outside. We're trying to take the jury upstairs somewhere where we don't have space there either. We'll also allow for an executive session room for the council. If you've been here all night, we've had executive session, we have everybody step outside. We'll let the council go in the other room and people can stay in here out of the weather, whether it's raining or it's muggy or the mosquitoes are out. It will also provide us with another room for groups to meet, like the Shore Acres Recreation Association or for others who like for this facility to get as much use in the community as possible practical. We have an ever-increasing number of groups using this room. If I had another small silver lining, it really did build on our sense of community. This building gets used for non-city, directly city meetings, 2 to 4 times a week now. And so we'd like to continue to build on that and have that be a positive thing. So we'll be securing separately and have this down here be usable. It's moving terribly slow. It's also requiring us to change the air conditioning and the electrical service to this building. This building has no service drop of its own. It comes off of the water plant. And as we've examined all that, the water plant's all three-phase, and we run a transformer for this building, and we're looking to convert this room to three-phase so that everything is three-phase. We use the same generators. We have a natural gas generator that's donated to the city that we'll be installing here, so we have some redundancy for this building, and all of that's just moving much, much slower than we had hoped. The money is there in this case. We just need to get on with it and get ready to go out for bids. Just last Thursday, Jay and I got a set of plans for the flat work to look at. We have some changes on that, but the amount of parking will be increased and the drainage will be improved, and I think it'll be a real positive thing going forward. I can't tell you what the timing is. I wish I could. We really were ready about 2 months ago to pull that trigger. On that same front, waterfront, Miramar was raised this evening. It has been now, we're going on 4 weeks, that the city engineer has been tasked with. It was in advance, it was 2 weeks in advance of the 4th of July. So it was 2 weeks before the 4th, so it's mid-June, with putting together the bid documents to do the restoration of the grass area along Miramar. There's two components to what we're doing on Miramar. One is repair what's there, and the other is to go after being able to restore what was there in terms of what we've lost. The actual land mass is lost by erosion from the storm. Those are two different things, and they're coming from two different pots of money. The first part that we want to move on now, FEMA has, again, already put the money up. We received $54,000, which is not enough to restore the landmass and put in a new waterfront protection. But it is enough for us to replace the benches that were destroyed, to go through there, and we were contracting to bring equipment through to rake out all of the riprap and the rock and concrete that's in turf. As it is now, we can't send commercial mowing equipment over it and give it turf mowing without damaging equipment. So they'll do that and bring in topsoil. A large amount of topsoil comes in, and then hydromulching it. And we do have the funds for that, and as soon as we can go out for bid and get that work underway, we will. I expect it will probably be mid or late summer before that gets underway and completed in the fall. But it is in the works, and those monies, like the trees, that money is there. So that will move forward. I'd like to move to the next discussion item that's on the agenda, which is the post-Ike Danger building enforcement.
Could I ask you a couple?
Sure.
The police station, where
are
we at?
That's the thing after this next item.
Okay.
It's on there.
Before I lose my train of thought, the P&Z, the variance meeting is on the 15th, a week from Wednesday?
It's day after tomorrow.
Day after tomorrow. Do we need to post it?
It is posted.
So council, as many of council can show up as they want?
You can show up if you want to participate in it. I'll need to.
That's what I was curious about. I was going to poll the council to see if we need to. Isn't that a different posting?
Yes. You're past the posting on that.
Okay, so no more than two of us could be here.
All of you can come, but you can't have more than a quorum of you participate in any of the discussions.
How does it? All of us can come, but not all of us can talk?
Yeah. Oh, okay. And you know, technically, someone could say you shouldn't all be there, but.
Was anybody planning on coming to the planning zone?
I believe
it. He has to be here.
One of my items is on the agenda.
Yeah. Dolly, were you planning?
I'm on vacation this week. Otherwise, yes, I would have been there. So they know about it. Yeah, I was going
to go. You're possible?
No.
Okay. What's a quorum? Three?
How many are going to be there now?
Three.
You count me?
Yeah.
I'm a petitioner.
Well, I know.
That's exempt yet.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, what is the cost of it? Is it fences and buildings, everything?
Yes.
Well, Robert and I will talk in only one of those ones. So
okay, that'd be good. Okay. Good.
Are you going? Are you going to go?
Well, I didn't want to create any problems. That's why I asked.
So those two will definitely go.
And one of you
will see which one of
okay.
Them.
Oh, that's good.
All right. Who's going to be silent now? I won't be silent, but I think it's going to cover fences too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's really rather unlikely that the Planning and Zoning Commission will deliberate and draft a report and recommendation at Wednesday night's meeting and take a vote to approve to send that to council. And, you know, the downside of you being there and being challenged legally is that it would nullify the action of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Which probably isn't going to happen.
Which I don't believe is going to happen, because my discussion with them is this to be an introductory meeting and find a direction and give a period of time for some research, which likely will be 2 weeks, and come back and have a more constructive meeting. And on that meeting, we can post it and council can come and
voice part of that. One part is to address the code for fences.
There's two elements, fences, but it's fence height and placement of the fence.
Yeah.
And the other is enclosures under elevated structures, garages.
Okay. Is there anything else? My ramp?
There.
Is that in there?
Yeah. No, we took that off. Yes, there is that. There is indeed a variance request for
a
reduction of a setback on a corner lot, yes.
I don't know about the ramp anyways, but... All right, I'm locked into the ramp.
Soapbox derby.
All my grandkids would be rolling down that thing with skateboards. I know they'd probably kill themselves.
You also take those meetings?
Yes. Yes, I do. All right. Let's go to the Anchors Buildings. I had been, I was going to today, but today was extremely busy, so I did not get out one of those periodic reports I've been seeing in PDFs. But there will be one, and additional letters went out today. I've really been surprised at how effective the dangerous building enforcement letters have been. There are a number of folks who, for a whole variety of reasons, real or imagined, had not taken any action with these homes, not all of which are substantially damaged, but have just been, in essence, abandoned since the hurricane. And we're now at over 50% of the properties that are targeted have already had forward action. About a full third of them immediately got demolition permits and hired contractors, and so that's been very positive. There are some that it was frankly a surprise. They were homes that were not substantially damaged that could have been repaired, and they elected just to demolish to get out from under the threat of action by the city. So for a lot of our residents that have problem properties behind them or next to them across the street, those properties are getting addressed. Unfortunately, you can't drive by all those and see that from driving by. But when I drive the city, which I do frequently, I take some comfort in knowing that there's forward motion that's happening in a property that you still can't see if I'm driving by. I'll get a report out to you tomorrow on that. I think last week alone we issued 5 demolition permits. And if you drove around since last Wednesday, I think we've had 5 homes that have been demolished between Thursday and today. Altogether, I expect that we will see about 90 houses demolished, substantially damaged and otherwise, about 1 out of 7. The potential, if we look at all of the ones where there's no forward motion that have potential, where we didn't expect it with this round, if all of those get demolished, we could see even more homes than that. We could be approaching 100 homes. The upside of that is it removes, abates nuisances. It takes homes that are going to be flood prone in the future away. But along with that goes taxable value, which along with that goes revenue for the city. However, it does make us more attractive for someone to come in and to build, and that's been a big part of it. You know, we've made a big push to keep the median maintenance up, and the county came in and helped us last Thursday by repainting the curbs and stripes along Shore Acres Boulevard from 146 to Miramar. We're really, wherever we can, taking advantage of improving the appearance of the city on public property as well as on the private property, and seeing if we can't make this a place where people want to come in and build a new home. We started very early. The first wave of enforcement was vacant lots and swimming pools. Those moved through the process, have been set for court. We've had a dozen property owners appear in municipal court. We have probably 3 times that that did not, that have now been summoned in another more formal action, which will lead to failure to appear, and they can be arrested in the next cycle. It's a long process, particularly when they're an absentee owner, but that is occurring. The judge, of course, is a resident of the city and is working with people trying to do what a judge does and be reasonable. Those folks who are next to one of those problem lots may be much less reasonable if they had been there. But we're seeing the forward motion, and the judge is committed to take action if there's not forward motion. So we do follow up and do that. The cycle is rather long, though, and some of the resets for court, it's out 60 or 90 days before they come back to court after they've made an appearance. So that may be the run of time for them to take some action. Some do, like like, and I don't know that's the case with your property, but some folks will go out and they'll do something the day of court or the day before court, so they come into court and say they're doing something, and that may be all they do for the next 60 days, but we're going to keep pressing.
So that doesn't take them off our radar?
No. As a matter of fact, just so you know, even on the dangerous buildings, for example, someone and you've seen the forms, we send a written request for them to declare to us what their intent is, whether they're going to secure the property, demolish it, or repair it. And we're given 10 days to send that back in. After that, if we don't get that back, then we move to the court action. If they send that back, then we wait 21 days for them to complete that action, then we move to court action. That said, if someone calls and says, today's the 10th day, I'm going to send you the form in, you'll get it next week, we intend to do X, Y, or Z, when they've missed the date, we still move to court action. And I have had some people who have been unhappy and said, I told you we're going to demolish or we're going to repair, and you've gone ahead and filed this court case. I said, absolutely. And when it comes up for court, I'll be more than happy to come to court and say you have done whatever it is, because it's not about the money, but we are not willing to lose the time getting strung along until you've not performed. And then we start that, because it's a long process as it is. So we're more than happy to come to court and say it's all been taken care of. And on pools, for example, we've had a lot of cases of that. One near you, where they end up demolishing, but they took the pool out in advance to stop the bleeding on that court case. So that's where we are with the building enforcement. Some of those that had previously with the vacant lots, for example, this was a completely different process. Vacant lots and pools were handled by the police department code enforcement. All the dangerous building is being handled by Latney and I. And we're running in parallel tracks. One doesn't exclude the other. We just do our own things in parallel tracks. One of the advantages that we have now is that the process that Latney and I use is more of a civil process, and the police department uses a criminal process. And in those properties that they were having no luck with, in the criminal process, that were foreclosures, or they were properties owned by trustees where it was in estate, they made little progress. But on our civil side, it's a process that those folks all understand. And where they no longer are owners, or they've transferred it, they're letting us know exactly who they sold it to and how to get a hold of them. And so we're getting lots of new information, and we're pushing that process forward. And those that are responsible have been much more receptive to our civil action than to the criminal action. I guess they're just not very concerned with a criminal fine, but a civil penalty that passes with the title they're concerned about. So they've been hiring contractors and pulling permits and making progress.
Another question. Houses being demolished, how many building plans have been submitted? Have any idea? How many are going to actually build something on the empty lots?
I think at this point it's probably about only 20% indicate they're going to come back and build something on the lot. We have seen a surge. We issued 3 new home permits last week. And so we're starting to see a few trickle in. I think there'll be, I don't think we'll go over 50%. I think it'll be under 50% of the pre-storm property owner building a new house on the same lot for a whole host of reasons of can't afford it or an opportunity to cash out and move on and not build. And there have been folks who demolished and today one said they'd be rebuilding, and today you can go by and see those lots are on the market. It's pretty clear they've changed their mind for whatever reason. So we don't count it as a house coming back until there's a building permit pulled. We have more new home construction going on now than we have really about any time in the last 5 years, which is not a lot, and we need a lot more than that, but we do have new home construction. We had new home permits that were issued before Ike, that within a month after Ike, the construction began, the house over here on Shady Lawn, I believe Shady Lawn, is an example in the 600 block. They had a permit before the storm. About 4 weeks after the storm, they started construction of the house. So it doesn't appear that that everyone's been scared off by the storm. Community Development Block grants. We have had some more twists and turns in that process, not altogether unanticipated, but frustrating nonetheless. The $5.1 million in grant money that the city has talked about, having received as a directed allocation, is the Community Development Block grant money. It's HUD money, it flows from HUD, it's disaster recovery money from HUD, but it comes to the state. The state agency that's responsible for that is the Office of Rural Community Affairs, ORCA, who next year is going to change their name. ORCA then turned to regional councils of government, in our case HGAC. HGAC then was responsible for looking at how the allocation would work within their eligible counties. We've gone through that process. Out of that, Harris County got a block of money, and under Harris County, we got a block of money. It's an awful lot of steps. It's like the telephone game. At every level, someone extracts their own project management dollars, but at the end, our share is actually very, very large in per capita and per area. $5.1 million puts us about number four on the list of all of the communities outside of Houston in Harris County. So we've done well if we can ever get the money and can spend it. Harris County believed they'd be able to convince the state to change the process and to be able to turn that money over to the cities, for the cities to do the contracting and execution. And when they push came to shove and the final decision making was done, the state preempted that and said, no, there's no change. It'll be done the way it's always done. So it'll either be direct or the county will have to do the projects. And that's where we're at. We're high-centered, and we can't go direct because we're not an entitlement city, which means we don't already get HUD money for low and moderate income. And we would have to meet the LMI standards to get the full funding, and the city of Short Acres doesn't. If we allow Harris County to do the project, then we use Harris County's LMI, and they do meet the test, and we get our full $5.1 million. So we're stuck in that path. So now we are continuing to work with Harris County, now with a little different tilt in that we know they're going to be executing our projects, and we want to have as much influence on that as we can. And that negotiation is ongoing. I got more requests for information today from them, since they are also doing our applications then and all the rest of the process. HUD has said that they expect the money to flow late summer. That was as specific as they got, late summer. I think you're really looking at September as the earliest that any of that would be flowing. And since our projects are design build, and that depending on how the county does that, that you speed up or slow down our projects. But they're going to go painfully slow, I'm afraid. That is our two lift stations, our water plant, our street work, and our storm drainage work are all hung up by that. It is real important for everyone to understand that if the city begins any of those projects in advance of the approval of funds, which is when the money flows, that the project becomes ineligible. They will say you have the means to do the project and you're on your own. They won't. It's not like they just disallow the portion you spent. The whole project becomes ineligible. So we have to continue to sit on our hands, and actually we're in much better shape than a lot of communities like Seabrook, who had no choice but to go ahead and rehabilitate lift stations and just lose the money. So it's frustrating, and it's going to draw out, and we just have to keep hammering on it. One of the, we're really in the best position we could be for these funds in that we have a direct allocation, which means the $5.1 million is set aside for us. It's set aside for eligible projects, which is better than competing for projects, because anything you lost, you would lose that share of money. If they were determined that one of our projects, for whatever reason, is ineligible, that project would be killed, but the $5.1 million stays in the pot. So if there is another eligible project, we can expand that. So what we get and how it's done and how it's executed, how efficient or inefficient the county and the county's contractors are, all those things are fluid. But in the end, we'll still get our $5.1 million.
And project eligibility is yet to be determined?
Project eligibility is the last element of the approval process, which is late summer. They do a preliminary that says first cut, and they reject things, and then you move to the next level, and we're now at about, it'll be about, there's like three different hoops to jump through there. And now headed into the third hoop. And so until you actually get the approval, someone can get a bug and decide that this isn't storm damage. And it really comes down to two things. It is damage by the storm or failed to function. Those are the two criteria. Everything has to meet those two things. Once you meet that test, the money that you get is for not only repair, but for mitigation. And the lion's share of our money is mitigation. And the mitigation things are not something that necessarily was damaged or because it wasn't there or failed to function. We hang our hat more on failed to function than that we would have suffered less damage had we had the mitigation there. So it's frustrating, and they could be picking and choosing, and everything that we had on our list we may not convince them of. It's most frustrating in that it's like not getting to pick the attorney that's going to handle your trial. The county's going to make that argument for us, and how vigorously they argue for it, you know, is anybody's guess. They have a lot of projects in a lot of communities, and, you know, I don't think, frankly, no matter how much they argue the point, I don't think they would argue it as vigorously as we would when that project is our own.
Well, one of my concerns is as the citizens move forward and start moving back into the city, we're going to get to the point where we're starting to tax the lift station and tax the water supply in the condition that it's in today.
Yes. And we have already hit that. We have in place contingencies for ramping up our water and our wastewater. We have contingencies for that, some of which we've already exercised. We've already purchased two motors that we'd rather not have purchased, that we had to purchase, so that we met the criteria of not only service, but backup on the service. We have put into place a plan for this hurricane season with this water plant down, where we'll have standby agreement for generators for water and sewer. And if a storm comes into the Gulf, then we'll rent those generators and bring them on site, and we'll sit on them and hopefully never use them. But we were without any emergency generators at all. We lost our emergency generator in Ike. And so it's imperative that we have more going into this season than we had in the last season. So,
good.
Yes.
Is there anybody within Harris County that we could reach out to or be influential to help us with this?
Yes.
Sylvia Garcia?
Yes, and we will. And, you know, speaking frankly, and we have no media in the room, right? It's a little bit of a dance, because any help that we get is going to come from the political side, specifically Sylvia Garcia and Ed Emmett. I've known Ed Emmett for a number of years personally, and I'm very confident that Ed Emmett won't drop us in the grease. However, you have to keep your powder dry, because as in any government entity, you have a bureaucracy and you have career folks. And if they think that they're being manipulated or going to be at the end of the process, they'll dig in now, and it will make it very difficult. So the thing to do is to do what we're doing now. Keep our eye on the ball, keep plodding along, wait till we get to the 11th hour, and then the 11th hour, press our case when both sides have run out of time. And then that's when we use any political influence that we can have to change the process, where the momentum is there. Because they will. You always have that potential of saying, no, if we do that with Short Acres, then these other communities are going to want that, and then it's not going to be manageable, and dig in and make it impossible for you to overcome. Pardon?
Some of the county getting ORCA, that the scoop we're going through is still the county.
Actually, ORCA is not going to be our problem. The county can be our problem. ORCA is the issue on deciding is the money. But the money's already been divided. It's just a matter of releasing it. And so ORCA's waiting for the county to give them projects that ORCA says is eligible. And then they'll pass that money to the county. That's when our problem begins, once the county has the money. Because under the program, the county will do all of the management and administration of the grant, and will hire all the engineering and services and contractors that do the work. And in doing that, they'll define not only the scope, but the whole project. And they'll do that independently of us. As far as the county is concerned, at staff level, we're already out of it. So the paragraph that I've written and sent to them that, you know, we need to make repairs to a lift station, elevate it and harden it from a storm, instead of doing it in the concept that we see and the way we think benefits us the most, it'll just be turned over to an engineering firm, and it's however they want to do it. And that may be great, and it may be horrible. I would like for us to play a bigger role in that process. I'd like to see what it is that they want to do, because, you know, we have a concept of what works for us. And once they do the project and they hand it over, we have to maintain it. So if it's a high maintenance execution, I mean, there are some things that we would settle for lesser, you know, don't gold plate it, but make it where the long-term operating costs are low. That's much more important to us than having everything hot-dip galvanized, gold plated. So that's the process input that is very important to us. And the county has there's no warranty. And to give you a real life example, when I went to the city of Columbus, an engineer had specced an auger screen for the sewer plant, and it was under construction when I arrived, and the machinery arrived, and I asked to see the plant because it didn't look right. And this is a big auger, about that big around, that looks like a big drill, and it's a screen. And the wastewater stream runs through it, and it turns and pulls all the solids up and dumps them out. And it goes in a trough, a concrete trough that was 20-some feet deep, the walls on it like this, and it's only about that wide. And the idea of this auger is whenever it has a problem, it tilts up out of the trough where you can walk along and service it. The only problem is, the engineer laid it out in its operating position, and didn't make the trough long enough for it to tilt up. So, you know, if we have something like that happen to us, it's all done, it's done to spec, it's done by the plans, the contractor has no liability, it gets signed over, we don't even get to it. The way the contract reads that they want us to sign, we don't even get to review it before acceptance. They accept it on our behalf, and here it is. And so if something like that were to happen, then it's our fault. So I just think we need to play a bigger role in it than what they have. They are moving forward on that. I think it will be probably August before we know where the eligibility stands, so we may need to adjust. The other things, I did mention streets and storm drainage, the water plant, number one, wastewater lift stations number one and number three. Also on that is the police station and public works building. Those of you that may not know, we're moving the police department from here downstairs to the old fire station, but we're turning that from a two-story building into a one. So we're elevating the first floor about a big split elevation. The plan as it is now is to reskin that building and put a deck on the front of it and stairs that will match City Hall, so architecturally these will both look the same. We'll lose some square footage, but we'll be able to get everybody out of the flood risk in the future. That building has flooded a lot more than just Alicia and I, so that will be good. So that's in there. Emergency generators are in there, with the exception of City Hall, which was donated, and a communications tower. We had a radio tower here that fell over the building, and we got both FEMA and the community development block grant money so that we can put a much more substantial tower in that won't topple in 125 mile an hour winds, so that we keep our communications for police and public works and internet in the next storm. And that's one of those things where we have the FEMA money, but we can't spend any of that until we get the community development block grant money, or we give that up too. So all those
things. When you say the county will decide who gets the money, then the county will manage that project or whatever. But when you say county, are you talking the county judge and commissioners? I wonder who is the one to get together and decide this.
It's the the county's community development, CDS, Community Development Services. They're the ones who normally handle low-income housing, like apartments and that kind of work. I believe they'll be reaching out to the Harris County Infrastructure Group, which Art Story is over in the county engineer's office, that does infrastructure engineering. But my understanding is also that this will be all subbed out work, that the county will do that in terms of management, but the projects will be project engineers, not county engineers.
Well, that's fine. Cities and communities that are interested in the money will not be part of the decision-making process, other than the paperwork that's in front of the block grant program.
Well, the decision-making level that the current process involves is when we all made our applications for money, you know, which was months and months ago, and said what we needed and what's left standing today, that those are the projects that will get done. How they're executed is not part of what they'll get you involved in.
Thank you, man. Spent a lot of time on explaining all this. Sure.
That's all I got.
All right. 4.24, Police Department report. In your packet was a report from the chief. I thought that July 4th went very well. We had a bunch of people in the city, and we had three or four police officers on duty that night. Everything went very well, very smoothly.
Yep, no citations and no arrests. And while we're on the police stuff, I would mention that Saturday we had a very bad traffic accident at Chargers Boulevard in 146. Yes, hit the sign, hit the pole, and sent a car off into where we had the temporary debris site. Some pretty good injuries there. And I was here Saturday, so I saw all of that carnage when I came to work. But I also expressed my displeasure with the record services and asked the police department to address that. They did not sweep the road clear. They left a lot of small debris in the road, and they should be required to remove all of that. They didn't. And the other was even more tragic in that in the wee hours of the morning this morning, someone straightened out 146. I guess that's Wharton Williams, where it makes the curve back in, and a small red sports car went straight and rolled many times and threw the driver out, who did not get discovered for hours. It wasn't until daylight that the accident was discovered, and one of our officers responded out there and found the vehicle and the driver, who was deceased. So another bad accident.
Wow.
46.
Just driven right by it. That's it. Okay.
What time is the accident on Saturday?
It is afternoon, like 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock.
Friday morning, I saw an 18-wheeler turning west on Oregon Boulevard off of 146, and his trailer was scraping that pole, and everything was just shaking. All the lights and the poles were just shaking. I was waiting for the pole there. It's got a mark on it.
Okay, any other discussion on the police department report? Eight of them. Yeah, moving on, consideration of further invoices.
Make a motion to pay the bills.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Consideration action to approve a resolution suspending for another 90 days the effective date of the application of CenterPoint Energy Houston Electric LLC to revise certain discretionary charges, authorizing and setting of interim rates, authorizing the city to participate in a coalition of cities known as the Texas Coast Utilities Coalition, authorizing and hire, councils and experts through TCUC, requiring reimbursement of costs, and authorizing the city's intervention as part of TCUC at the Public Utility Commission.
Is this new above and beyond the documents that we approved last year when we had to end the session of grace while they were negotiating?
It's a continuation, and yes, it's the same issues, and we're making forward progress, and this would put interim rates into place and bring additional leverage to drive those down. And our attorneys believe that they can get a further reduction by taking this action.
I find it interesting that we have to approve putting the interim rates into effect while they're negotiating.
Yeah.
We can't leave it the way it was. We have to do the interim.
Did Seabrook withdraw? Can you read that?
I don't know.
Is that going to be
2009-18?
2018.
Yes.
Do I have a second?
Yes,
Don.
Dana.
Dana, a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. 5.3, consideration action approved resolution suspending the effective date of rates, schedules, and tariffs, CenterPoint Energy Intex, for 90 days with regard to the filing by CenterPoint Gas with the city on May 1, 2009, requiring CenterPoint to reimburse reasonable rate case expenses, authorizing a city representative to join a coalition of cities to direct experts and special counsel act on the city's behalf, and authorizing the retention of special counsel and rate consultant firms.
This is a more of a routine prove-it maneuver where Syntex has asked for increasing gas rates that we think are beyond what they're eligible for, and if we don't take any action, it automatically becomes approved, and it is then the basis for any future rate increase. And this gives the 90 days for our consultants to take a look at that and attorneys and raise any challenges if they exist. And under the way that the rules work, since they're a monopoly, then they have to reimburse our cost of reviewing the rate that they have proposed, and this just allows 90 days to do that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. What's the next item on the agenda?
5.4.
It's not a German yet?
No.
Okay, here it is. I found consideration and action to approve an ordinance providing for an agreement between the city and the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region. We've been a participant of the Economic Alliance for a couple of years at the sponsorship of different industry partners that Jan Lawler has brought to us. They really want us in this group, but I've told them we really can't afford it, and now even much more so we can't afford it. It is a commitment for 3 years. She does have our first year sponsorship already in hand, so it is not a commitment of any monies coming out of the city budget for this year. If we get bounced around, don't have a sponsor, then we'll be more than happy to exercise our 30-day notice and bail. It has meant that we have a seat at the table at like transportation committee meetings. It has meant that Jan spends a lot of time and effort bringing people down to the yacht club to spend money at lunch and dinners and stuff like that. So that has generated a little bit of revenue for the city. Well, you know, because of our confines and constraints, we'll never see a lot of economic development, but it helps. Every little bit helps, and if it costs us nothing, I think it's a good idea.
Okay, it costs us nothing for the first year?
Correct.
And all we need is a sponsor, and the sponsor is available.
Yeah. And we had Complete Resolve has committed this year. And in years past, it's been somebody. I think Lyondell did it 1 year. There's Exxon Mobil did it 1 year.
Make a motion that we approve ordinance number 2009-44.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Consideration action to schedule budget workshop meetings as may be required.
I'd like to get on your calendar.
Please.
As we move forward with some budget stuff. And I guess my recommendation is that we go ahead and set two dates. Historically, in the last few years, we've had anywhere from 1 to 3 days beyond the council meeting. Last year, we did one date, and we put the rest of the workshops tagged on the council meetings, made for a little longer meetings, but the same dates. And what I'm asking here is something is to first go ahead and put two dates in addition to council. This is going to be a little more involved in the budget this year. We have a few new challenges, and so I'm looking at like August 3rd or 4th and 17 or 18, which would put it off cycle from the council meetings so that we don't get staff stuff bunched up. I know that there had been some discussion about doing it on Tuesdays, so Tuesdays are fine with me.
Actually, it doesn't matter. They start changing the class dates
around.
They don't want to, which is bad. So, yeah. Majority of the dates are like that. Are we looking at the start time, 7 or 6?
It's up to you.
Either time is fine for many of those being different.
Okay, keeping the money.
Yeah, 6 o'clock would make it for an easier evening if it went late. Yes.
It's okay by me.
And if we get into that and we need additional dates, then we'll have time to discuss that. But we had a couple down there, we can start scheduling around. All right. Good. Yes?
Do you have a list, like you did last year, of scheduled year ratings and so on and so forth?
Do I have a list? That's right up there with do I have a picture? Look at that, August 1st, are you on there?
I just
was
looking at it.
Is that the list you were looking for? Yeah. But it was back in May.
Yeah, it was way back.
You know, it was third week of May. That's been an eternity ago.
This tax and budget calendar and all the dates that they and jail have to keep track of.
Yes, it's the taxing and budget calendar. It is taxing. Okay. With that, 6.0 adjournment at 8:21.